You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
And your come and save her. Better believe it, get on your knees and pray her. Then pray her, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong. When I turn right, but you turn all the way.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
We are thankful to you, and we are thank you, thank you, thank you. We are thankful for you as well. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I am so happy to welcome our guest today and welcome all of our friends who listen everywhere around the world. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Hi, Dawn. Thank you for that introduction. My name is Denise Walters. I am the tribal council chair for Nottoway Indian Tribe of Virginia.
We're thrilled to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's always so good to talk with you.
We are always grateful for the difference that you are making among our Southeast tribes. What's happening now?
Well, what we're really excited about is our upcoming powwow. The Nottoway Indian Tribe of Virginia Powwow will be taking place in Surry County on September the 17th and the 18th. And it's really going to be spectacular to get back together with everyone in our community. It's been 2 long years now since our last powwow with all of the COVID, and we are so excited to be together again.
For our friends who may be listening, we have wonderful friends who listen in Israel and France and Ghana and Nigeria, Mexico, all kinds of places. Oh, New Zealand, right? Australia, even Micronesia. We would love it if you would tell us what we could expect from your tribal powwow.
Thank you for that question. Our tribal powwow is a little different from some other powwows. We refer to it as a traditional powwow. We do not do any competition. All of our powwow is more like a combination of a big family reunion, a educational event for the community, and just a fun-filled day for people of all different ages. We have vendors that are set up that have a wide array of different traditional arts and crafts. We have an educational area that our tribe sets up that talks about our tribal history. We also have a reenactor who's a local anthropologist, and he does a 17th century colonist reenactment. We have a person who does primitive weapons and native survival skills, Frankie Redhawk. So he'll be doing a demo for us. And I forgot to mention our anthropologist's name, Dr. Buck Woodard. He's been a longtime friend and is a great attraction at our powwow. And then, of course, any powwow is going to have your dancers and your drum, which is key. Our two drums this year are Yapatoko and White Buffalo Singers. And our head lady dancer is Adrienne Harmon, and our head male dancer is Lewis Campbell.
I appreciate you sharing that with us so much. You know, I think it is important to make those distinctions. Traditional is a really interesting word because so many powwows now are regional or even national or international, and so have a pan-Indian kind of flavor. But you said that there are specific parts of this powwow that reflect the Nottoway people. So will you tell us about your people? Will you introduce us to your tribe?
Certainly. So our tribe, of course, as every other tribe, has been here. We have been here. We are always here. Some of the studies in the area show indigenous people in the area back to, I think it's 18,000 BC. So we've been here a long time. And the Europeans first visited us in the 1600s. We had a number of villages that were all throughout a number of the current counties in Virginia, Surrey, Sussex, Southampton, Nottoway, Isle of Wight. And as everybody's story goes, there was encroachment over many, many years that kept forcing us into smaller and smaller areas. And then in the 1850s or so, through lots of interesting tactics of the local folks, we ended up losing our reservation and having it broken out into separate allotments. And at that point, the state considered us not recognized anymore because we didn't have a reservation, but we didn't go anywhere. Our people still stayed in the community. We stayed in touch. We had businesses where tribal citizens got together and had a common business together. We were together in the churches. So we still maintained that connection within our families. And then we decided years ago that we really wanted to still have that recognition as a tribal entity. We got together and applied to the state, and we got our state recognition back in 2010. So at least we are recognized by the state of Virginia. And we have a museum and cultural center in Southampton County on Main Street in a little town called Capring, Virginia. And our little museum is small, but I say we're small but mighty. We have a lot of programming that we have been running from that museum. A lot of it's been on hold because of COVID. But prior to COVID, we had a series of artisan markets on Saturdays where not only tribal citizens, but the local community could also come and share their art and sell art. And every once in a while, we'd have somebody with fried bread and Indian tacos as well, so we could just turn it into a real community party. We've had people come and give historical lectures, kind of through a series called Let's Talk, where we talk to the community. We've had people do various different arts and crafts workshops. Some were more traditional things like twining or beadwork, pine needle baskets. But we've also had some things that were professional development workshops, like creating your own vision board. And in addition to all of that, we had a community garden that we started in our tribal area that we grew sunflower seeds. And these were seeds that were saved from out west. And then one other thing I want to highlight about our tribe is the environmental focus. We have a very strong environmental focus. And one of the programs we started recently is doing kayaking trips up and down the Nottoway River, some with just tribal citizens, but some inviting the community as well to learn about our tribe's history and culture, but also to focus on the importance of the water. And then last of all, we are all very involved in our broader communities. We have typically held leadership roles from my son, who's Native Student Union president when he was in college. The chief's granddaughter is currently a Native Student Union president at her university. And the chief and I both hold chair positions now for local museums. She currently is the president of the Board of Trustees for the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, and I am the chair of the Science Museum of Virginia Board of Trustees. So we try and do everything we can to bring our story to the community in different ways and also to give back.
Wonderful. I mean, I thank you, and I thank your tribe and your leaders for all you are doing to help others and to make the community a better place. Why is that representation beyond the tribe so important?
inclusion is important in every aspect of life. And there are so many times that I feel like people treat us as Indigenous people as a relic of the past. Mm-hmm. And what we were 200 years ago or 400 years ago, it's almost like they still have that TV Hollywood view of us. And it's important for us to be able to show who we are today. I think the other thing is we have a lot of Indigenous knowledge that would be beneficial to the world right now.
Yeah.
As we face all the struggles that we do, whether it's our knowledge of plants, of working together with the environment rather than against the environment, or even if it's our long-term mindset where you think about what the impact is of what you do and your decisions for generations and not just what you can make in the next 3 years because it's the corporate business plan.
We have a wonderful array, a feast, really, of Native representation in television and movies at this moment in time. Reservation Dogs and Rutherford Falls and Prey, Dark Winds. We just have a lot of media representation. And so what I'm seeing, even in the wider world and popular culture, is people taking a renewed interest in Native American culture or Native American and Indigenous ideas and beliefs. Is a powwow a good place to start to explore that?
Absolutely, because if you come to a powwow, first of all, you get a sense of the traditions and the cultures. And at a powwow, you usually have an MC who gives you a nice commentary. So you're not just seeing people dance, but you have an MC who's interpreting and explaining what the dances mean or what the clothing means, what the symbols are, because everything that we do has a story that ties into it. And I think that's another thing that's been very popular in recent days is people hearing other people's stories. So coming to our powwow will give you an opportunity to hear our stories and to interact with people, whether they're telling a story in a circle, whether the MC is commenting on the dance styles or the clothing, whether you're hearing about our history from the interpretive area, or even in a venue you might not think of. For instance, one thing that's really different at our powwow this year is we have the mobile art mobile from the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. And they have an exhibit on portraits that includes some Native American portraits, but other portraits of other people from other backgrounds. But then we have an activity that's a take-home activity for children that has portraits of some of our tribal citizens, and it'll say who they are and what their roles are in the tribe, and then an activity for them to go home and create their own self-portrait so that they can think about how do they fit in and what's their story.
What a great way to, I mean, that is a beautiful example of inclusion and diversity, but application as well. You know, sometimes I feel like we have to take it to the next step, you know, empathy and inclusion and application to our own lives. And then that's how we develop allies and friends and connections. That's beautiful. I really love to hear your story about how you came to dance.
Wow. That goes way back. I have been dancing for probably more than 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up knowing that I had Native ancestry, and I had not found all of my cousins because we had kind of been away from all these cousins for so many years. But I showed up at a powwow in a dress and started talking to people in the area that was kind of close to where my people are from. I was actually at the Nansman Powwow. It was just down the road from the
mm-hmm,
Natalie Powwow.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And when I was telling somebody that I was looking for my family and I was looking for my heritage, and they saw that I was in the regalia, they were very open, they were very accepting, And this woman invited me to dance, and she would teach me how. And she loaned me her fan, and she loaned me her shawl, and she took me out in a circle. And that was actually the very first time I ever danced at a powwow. And I think, let me tell you the bookend of that story. So the bookend of the story is years later, you know, many different organizations I connected through. I met up with a cousin. I found the rest of the cousins in the Nottoway Indian Tribe of Virginia. I submitted my genealogy, and I was brought into the tribe as a full tribal member. And when I came into that circle as a full tribal citizen at our powwow for the first time, I literally cried like a baby. And that particular year, one of the drums had written a song and dedicated it to our tribe. And he called all the tribal citizens in to circle around the tribe. And I was just overcome with emotion because I was home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really fascinating for me to hear your perspective. And I thank you for sharing it, because I often forget that there are people reconnecting who didn't have their heritage, culture, language, traditions, their whole lives necessarily in certain ways. And so what advice would you give, what wisdom would you give to someone who is looking for their heritage and trying to reconnect right now?
So I think the first thing is relationship. Mm-hmm. And looking for family and gathering the stories, because that was where I started. Mm-hmm. I interviewed people in my family. I wrote down every snippet of information that I could find. I went to powwows and talked to people, and that's really how I started making the connections, because I'd show up to powwows and just start talking to people, and then I'd find out, oh, well, this person's my cousin.
Yeah.
This person's my cousin. Mm-hmm. And so those relationships, and then you can reconnect with the family, then that's the first step into reconnecting into the culture and the heritage and everything that comes with that, is finding your family.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful, because that's really all tribal connections. I mean, a tribe, a nation, is just made up of relatives in relationship mm-hmm. with one another. And so I love that. And now, you are in a position of leadership for your tribe. What's your vision for your people?
My vision is fully incorporating our history and our culture and our songs in everything that we do and everything that we are. And clawing back as much as we can from our history. We are working on language restoration right now, for instance.
Mm-hmm,
and my son is leading that initiative. But you know, where can we first claw back those stories? How many of the elders can we interview and write down everything that they remember so that we at least preserve that for the next generation? But then, what do we want to create for the new stories, the new vision? You know, how do we make sure that our people are provided for? How do we make sure that they have educational opportunities that build and support their families, but also build and support the tribe, so that we're not at a place where we're fighting and losing things again, but we're actually growing and continuing the culture and continuing our traditional belief systems. And then I want to go back to what I was saying about that, thinking about multiple generations. How do we make sure that we are taking care of our land, our water, and the health of our people, and prioritizing that? So, you know, I see that if we are successful in my generation, that the next generation and future generations, instead of living in a way where you feel like you're at the brink, that we feel like we are more living in balance.
I really appreciate you sharing that with us, because I think so often we're thinking about surviving and not moving towards thriving and the kinds of legacies that we're going to leave, you know, seven generations from now. And so all of this wonderful work that you are doing and other tribal leaders are doing, what do you hope that looks like in the future?
I hope that looks like broader collaboration. I hope it looks like a lot more participation from our children and young adults. You know, we've had a lot of leadership that are elders that are, you know, getting older and older. And so, you know, I'm hoping that we can get more of our young people involved, and I'm starting to see it going in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I want to see more of that and more growing in that area. I want to see more collaboration and support within just the broader Native community, that we work together and that we all take care of each other as Indigenous people, regardless of which tribe, which different culture or part of the country, which recognition status. I feel that we should all be supporting each other's efforts to maintain our culture, our lives, our traditions, and support and care for each other.
Well, there is a very popular movie out right now, Prey, in which a seemingly invisible predator, you know, has to be fought in order to save the tribe and the people. And I think COVID and some of these other pandemics and diseases that we're seeing right now, it really makes me think that there is a real live predator. There is something out there you can't necessarily see. And the reason there's so few of us in tribes and nations today is because of pandemics and genocide. And so I'd be fascinated to find out, how are you protecting your tribe? How are you leading in a time when we have a predator that you can't see? It's not coming in ships with guns and germs and steel. It's in the air.
Yeah, and this is not a new story. If you look back in Virginia, I think 75% of our Indigenous population was wiped out in the early days when the settlers came. Yeah. And that continues over and over again. But what are we doing to protect our own people? So, you know, first of all, I mentioned the fact that our powwow was postponed the first 2 years because the pandemic was raging. We didn't feel like we had the tools to protect our people. We didn't feel like the community was really ready. And in fact, when we made the decision to cancel last year's powwow, even though, you know, people had started to get vaccinated, we did look at what were the vaccination rates in the surrounding areas. What was the hospital occupancy rate at each of these areas? How many of our people had their own health concerns? And, you know, were they comfortable being at the powwow, masked or unmasked, et cetera? And, you know, being a scientist, I put everything together in a PowerPoint.
Right, right.
And I put that out with the entire tribal council, and we discussed what was the best decision for our people. And at that time, we felt like the best decision was to hold off for another year to make sure that we felt that we could do a better job protecting our people and our elders and before we decided to do a powwow. This year, we felt like we were in a better position because there's a larger number of people who are vaccinated. You know, even though we are aware, you know, multiple different variants, at least it seems like the incidents have gone down or the severity has gone down. So if you have something that's more like a cold and less deadly, then the risk profile is different. So we're still continuing to look at it. We're hoping that we don't have to make a decision like we did last year. We do have various different precautions in place. We will have masks available. We will have signage up as well at the powwow telling everyone to be careful, and, you know, masks are not required, but they are recommended. so that people can be as safe as possible, and we will be providing masks to people if they need them so that we can protect our folks.
We think about the winter counts that are made in the northern tribes, and so many of them show the advent of smallpox and the effect of those kinds of pandemics. What do you think future generations will say about this pandemic season and our tribes?
You know, that's interesting, because I think they'll still say that there are times that we've learned and then there are times that we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes within the tribes, I have seen great movement and everybody adopting safe precautions, and sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been saddened when I hear about the loss of elders. You know,
yes.
There are a number of
mm-hmm.
tribes that are losing some of their speakers who were yeah. elders and very susceptible to COVID and caught COVID. And I've heard horror stories where everyone in a household died. And
yeah. mm-hmm.
it breaks my heart. We've been fortunate that that has not been our story.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard others where that was a story. So, and I think it's not just in our Indigenous communities. If you look at the broader community, there's a lot that happened during this pandemic that paralleled the last pandemic in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same debate, the same argument, and lots of people died. So even though we have the new technologies, we still haven't changed the mindset. And I think that's something that's hard to get away from, because human nature is what human nature is. And you're not going to change human nature but so much. So we always have to deal with what's the human response and how do we be more thoughtful rather than following our animal brain being just reactionary.
Hmm. That's very powerful. And I think it's a fascinating insight, you know, and we are the ancestors right now. You know, someday they will reminisce over us and talk about us and what we did and didn't do and how we did and what we sacrificed and what we made our lives in order to bring future generations into the world. And so it's so interesting to hear your perspective as a leader, but also as a scientist on all of this. And so we've been looking at the pandemic, but do you see additional threats to your tribal way of life?
Well, there's always that challenge that you get so wrapped up in the day-to-day survival, as we mentioned earlier. If you're thinking about your job and your church or your family outings and school and, you know, whatever else is pulling on your time. There are so many things that the world wants you to address, and it seems like the pace is increasing every day, where you're just getting hit by things from every direction and everyone wants everything every minutes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide to prioritize what's most important, and where can creating and building that connection within your tribal community and maintaining the culture, how can you make that a higher priority in the middle of all the crises?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't say that I have the best answer for that, because I struggle with that every day. And as a tribal leader, I have to balance between how much time can I spend on a language meeting or an interview like this where I want to talk about our tribe versus, you know, my company's crazy schedule that, you know, starts my day sometimes at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning with meetings.
Mm-hmm. Balance, keeping a good mind, those are so important, and you're doing that so well. I can't wait to have some more of this conversation. We have to take a quick break and pay some of the bills with these commercials. But when we come back, we will talk much more about the great work you're doing and the wonderful way that you're impacting our world. We'll be right back.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Oh, wait a minute. They told us we had it all, Jordan. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of all.
I'm Jess.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drum over here. It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about
it. I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs are supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com, click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
When you take your car in for an oil change, a good mechanic will also take care of other routine maintenance to make sure your car runs safely and efficiently. Protecting your health isn't much different. When you get a COVID-19 vaccine, it's important to make sure you're also protected from other serious but preventable diseases. It's easy and convenient to get other routine vaccines at the same time as a COVID-19 vaccine. So make sure you ask a healthcare professional about other vaccines you may need to maintain your health.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans, who we are, what we miss, to get back to each other, to life. But it's okay to have questions like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at commemorativeairforce.org right now.
We can give you a new heart.
We can help you walk again.
We can perform brain surgery.
We can treat a sore throat.
We can bring life into the world.
We can work so many miracles, but the one thing we cannot do is read your mind.
When you communicate with your doctor,
when you ask us more questions,
you reduce your risk of suffering a medical mistake.
Tens of thousands of lives are lost every year due to medical mistakes.
The healthcare community is working on it, but you can help.
Please, open up. Ask more questions.
What are the side effects?
When should I expect my test results?
Will this medication interact with my other prescriptions?
We can't answer if you don't ask.
Help reduce your risk.
Questions are the answer.
Learn the 10 questions you must ask.
visit www.ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and the Ad Council.
Have you been diagnosed with prostate cancer? You may be eligible to participate in a clinical research study for an investigational procedure called high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU. This is a minimally invasive procedure. It is radiation-free, may destroy prostate cancer cells, and potentially has few side effects. This investigational procedure is performed at no cost to the patient. Call today at 1-866-619-6026 or visit www.theprostatecancerstudy.com. Have you been diagnosed with prostate cancer? You may be eligible to participate in a clinical research study for an investigational procedure called high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU. Call today at 1-866-619-6026 or visit www.theprostatecancerstudy.com.
Extinction is forever. To save America's most iconic and imperiled species from extinction, we must fight for their future. Fight to save the natural lands that wildlife call home. Fight to limit pollution. Fight for smart development. Fight for their future. And fight for ours. For so goes nature, so goes us.
We are strong and we'll get through this together, but these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
From the mouth we eat his goodness. The loaf we breathe is fulfillment. The cup we drink is forgiveness. The tongue we speak, hopefulness.
I really don't want to see the trail of the tears and the blood and the fear. You come and you feel that. As long as I'm breathing, I'm seeing the evil all around, all along, yeah, long. Tears with too much fear, fear.
Pray within, pray within.
from the mouth you eat, and the love we breathe, and the cup we drink, and the tongue we speak, and you see them die. So tell me why won't you come and breathe in? Save her, let her believe it, get on her knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
We love this conversation. This guest is one of our favorite people, and I'm so thankful that we're all here together to hear her wisdom and her grace. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
I'm Dr. Denise Walters from the Nottoway Indian Tribe of Virginia, and I'm Tribal Council Chair.
I am so happy that you're here. And one of the great things that I know that you bring to this conversation is wisdom. And so as you are leading, as you are thriving and helping your people to thrive in this world today, what's the role of your faith?
My faith is central to what I do. My belief that the Creator has given me skills and a good mind and direction for my life is part of what drives me. And I feel that because the Creator has given me these gifts, that I have a responsibility to share them when I've been called upon by my community to do so.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Are there specific parts of your tribal spirituality that help you to do that?
I think the main focus is around thankfulness. Mm-hmm. And I want to quote my cousin, Rick Kelly, who's also on tribal council with me, and he's our MC. Every time I talk to him, the first thing he says is, I'm thankful.
Yeah.
And that is so much of our traditional spirit. And in our language, we say, Degadene Herade. So I have started every day trying to remember to be thankful and start my day that way. And as I progress through my day, you hit challenges, multiple challenges, as I said, from every direction. But sometimes when those challenges come and I feel like I just can't take another one, I'd stop and take a breath and go, Degadene Herade.
Mm-hmm. Gratitude, the only attitude worth having. I mean, really, we have so much to be thankful for, and I'm so thankful that you are willing to center gratitude. What are you passionate about? What do you want to share with us that we might not already know about you?
I think one of the things I'm passionate about is storytelling. And I think I little bit about that, you know, how we do the storytelling at our powwow, whether it's someone giving a verbal story or people showing things like, you know, we have our people who are doing arts and crafts demonstrations. So someone will be talking about pottery, but they'll be talking about, you know, gathering the clay on their own land that's down in that area and making pottery. For my cousin Kim, who's a beater, but she also used to work for the Smithsonian. So when she teaches a beading class in our work on our tribal center, it's not just, I'm going to show you how to bead, but I'm going to talk about our history. I'm going to talk about the history of other Iroquoian people and history of beading. And, you know, we're getting a history lesson and looking at also other people's art as we're creating our own. So there's a story there. And then I'm a story quilter, and I create fabric quilts that tie back to our traditions, our story, and not away people. And as a chemist, I've also started doing a series of quilts that have some chemistry aspect to them as well. So again, you know, there's always that trend of story. And what's really fun is if I can then take that quilt and be able to talk and tell the story that goes with the quilt. Or I've even done some poetry and written some poems that go with the quilt. So that there's a whole story or a song or a dance or a poem or something that pulls this all together so that you have a multimedia way of conveying history and concepts and ideas. And I think when you do it that way, it's more expressive for me, and then it's more engaging for other people. And I think you get a different sense of a people and a culture, and it touches you in a different way emotionally when you can build in story and all the various different arts and how you can apply those arts to tell your story.
Oh, yes. That's marvelous. Marvelous. Years ago, someone asked me what I thought was the biggest difference linguistically and in communication between natives on my reservation and non-natives. And I thought at the time, and then I said, well, I think maybe one of the biggest differences is that when you ask non-natives what happened or what did they do today or how are you, they say fine. All right, doing all right. But when you ask us, we tell you a story. And I believe that the stories are how we introduce one another. Like when we meet someone, we tell stories until we find common ground and connections and cousins and relatives. And that stories are almost a currency. And one of my great mentors, the late Dr. Lee Francis, who founded Wordcraft Circle of Native Writers and Storytellers, he took me aside when I was working on my master's degree, and he said, we need you to tell our stories, because if we don't tell our own stories, someone else will tell them, and they will tell them wrong. And so what's a story in your life, in your tribe, that shapes you?
We talked about inclusion, mm-hmm. and I think that part of the story that really shapes me is that in our tribe, if you have Nodawé ancestry, you are included.
That's beautiful.
You mentioned someone else telling your story versus you being able to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've had an opportunity to do recently is to work with the Encyclopedia Virginia on telling our story from our perspective, so that it's not just the historians writing the story, but we actually had input into it. At some point in time, that will be coming out. I'm not sure when they will have updated the website, but there was a story in their magazine last year about the collaboration that they are doing with our tribe. And I believe they're probably doing similar things with the other tribes, but we were the first ones that are kind of the test case. So it's exciting to be part of the test case and on the forefront of being able to get our story told. And I think that's one of the things that's been missing in Virginia is there's a lot of writing about the Algonquian folks, which are, you know, Pocahontas's people,
mm-hmm.
and everybody that story about Pocahontas from childhood up. But that story about our Iroquoian people in Virginia has always been either completely left out of the textbooks or very minimal. And when they talk about the fact that there were three linguistic groups in our area, the Algonquian, the Iroquoian, and then the Siouan. But really telling our story and who we are has been something that's been looked over, which is very sad because if you look in the historical records, we were actually the best documented tribe in the area.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, what is it most important to do as you tell your story?
I think there are a number of things. I think first is to make sure that you have the story correct,
mm-hmm.
that you have an engaging way. Once you have the story correct, that you have an engaging way to bring people along with you and tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, you know, something that can make it meaningful, relevant, something that tells about the emotion? And I think that's really part of it is really being able to know your story. You know, as I talked earlier before, there was a lot I didn't know growing up, and I had to do a lot of asking, a lot of digging and talking to people, and then reading the history and reading about, you know, what was going on at the time. And that reading about the history in the area helped to give me a sense of understanding. And then you put that together with the stories from your family members. And then you put that together with other stories in the community. So, for instance, we would have a Let's Talk session at our tribal center, and we would invite the state archaeologist. And he came in, and we invited the community. We posted it in the paper and said, hey, if you found artifacts, bring them on over to our tribal center, and we've got somebody from the state who will help with identification. That means all of a sudden you have a room full of people with different racial backgrounds, different stories, and you have an anthropologist there all looking at historical artifacts, sharing stories, and talking about things, and we all learn from each other.
That sounds like a great way to live. As your powwow draws closer, I would like to offer you the opportunity to really invite people to your powwow. People who may have been to powwows all their lives or never been, people who are Native, people who are not. I'd like to ask you to give us an official invitation to your powwow.
Absolutely. I officially invite everybody who hears this to come to our powwow September the 17th and 18th in Surry County, Virginia. It's at the Rec Center. It's at the corner of Highway 10 and 31. If you're plugging the address into your phone, use the address 205 Enos Farm Drive, Surry, Virginia, and it'll take you right to the powwow. We invite you to come out both days and have a good time. Come in, join us for fun. Bring the entire family, the kids, the grandkids. Bring blankets, bring yards, bring a lawn chair. And we will welcome you like you're part of our family.
Mm. That's gorgeous. That's sacred. I love it. That's wonderful. Do you attend other powwows? Do you go to other tribal powwows?
Oh, yes. I've been attending other powwows for years and years. I can't say I make it to everybody's powwows all the time, but I typically try to attend most of them in Virginia. I've been to Nansemin many times, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Mattapani, both the Upper Mattapani as well as the Mattapani, Chickahominy, Monacan. So I've gone to all of those on a pretty frequent basis. I usually go down to the Meharon in North Carolina and also the Okeechobee Sapone. I just went to the Indian Steppes powwow in Pennsylvania a few months ago and met a bunch of new friends as well as getting to see some old friends up there that are part of the American Indian Society out of Washington, D.C. So, I try and go to a number of them, and I must say that my dream in retirement would be to travel around the country more, to go to more people's powwows and meet more people around Turtle Island.
Well, I knew the answer when I asked the question, but I wanted to hear the joy in your voice as you reflect on those powwow travels? And now that you've seen so many powwows and met so many people, what are some of the things that make a good powwow?
Let's see. There's so many things. You know, first of all, there's the good drums, because the drum fills your spirit. So having good drummers there who have energy and passion and are singing to the Creator and calling on the ancestors, you know, that's the heartbeat. Just like the drum is that heartbeat beat. That's the heartbeat of the powwow. And then you have all the dancers who come. And what's so beautiful is when you have different people from different cultures and different communities, the variety in everyone's regalia shows so much of who they are, with the colors and the different styles. And then, of course, there's just the fact that you have all the people there together. You know, that speaks to me so much. And then, of course, good food is always important. You know, I can always say that I'm hoping for a good Indian taco, but there's also variety. Because one of the things that we talk about in our tribe is, you know, we are Eastern people. Yes. So fish was a traditional thing. So we have a vendor that's got, you know, fried fish. And, you know, what's traditional for your area? So, yeah, that's something that's really important is the good food. And then, of course, you know, all of the things where someone is showing about the history and the culture, those exhibits where you can see things, you can touch things. A good powwow has a lot of vendors where you can buy something to take home. And I love all of our vendors, and I'm so excited that they come every year. Not to mention, if you're working on your newest set of regalia, having somebody who has really good hides is critically important, because it's really hard sometimes to find these. And especially, you know, some of the stores that used to carry leather in the areas went out of business during the pandemic. So a hide vendor is really great if you want to make some of your own regalia. If you're looking for beads, having somebody that has a good supply of high-quality beads is always great, and we usually have a bead vendor. So, you know, all of those things help make a powwow. And then I think the location also is important. We have a nice big ground where we have the space, and we have facilities for everyone to use. But one thing that was really interesting is when we had our first powwow years and years ago, people actually talked about healings that occurred and visions that they saw. And we really believe that the ancestors were rejoicing that we came back when we had our first powwow.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me today. I have loved every minute of it, and I'm so grateful and thankful for your gracious hospitality and generosity of spirit.
Thank you, Dawn, and it's always wonderful to talk with you. It's always wonderful to listen to your show and all the excellent people that you have telling their stories on your show. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about my people and our upcoming powwow.
You're a blessing to me and to many others, and we love you. And we love all of our friends who listen, our sponsors who help us to make the show possible. We are grateful and thankful. And most of all, we love God and we love people. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I can't wait till we're together again. We'll see you next time.
You come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. Once the war forgave you. Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Let her believe it, get on her knees and pray her. Then pray her, it never looked bad once the world forgave.
You've got the power, the world's greatest radio, talktainmentradio.com.